Blog Talk Radio.
Tony?
I'm here.
Did you hear that?
No, I couldn't hear it. I heard like some garble.
Did you hear it that time?
I can hear like a voice, but it doesn't come over clear over my airwaves.
Let's see if I can improve the volume.
Was that the audio from Bradley's Corner?
Yes. He basically said, I actually looked at it today. It was, I think, between the sixth and seventh round. And Bradley had actually switched at one point to southpaw.
I remember that.
And then he went back to his corner. And he said something like, "Oh, I'm hurting." When Diaz asked him, you know, "What the hell's wrong with you?" Basically, so he says, "You want to go home? You want to go home right now?" Because he said he was hurt. And it was probably the funniest thing I've ever seen in the corner. But you know, it was serious. He was so serious. He was like, "You want to go home right now? We'll go fucking home right now, buddy."
Was it better than Teddy Atlas sitting on Michael Moore's stool?
But anyway, screw the introductions, I guess. No. We got Tom on the line.
All right, guys. Looking
Tom,
forward to this one.
Are you surprised? Are you surprised you came home?
yeah, it was right on the money, bud.
My question.
Did I do what, Rich?
Did you go to the Stratosphere?
Yeah, I went there the first night. I got there on Friday. I was at the Stratosphere within 2 hours of arriving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't post really any of my photos yet. I just downloaded them the other day, and I was watching one of the videos. But, yeah, we went to the Stratosphere Friday night. They had 2-for-1 drinks and half-price appetizers.
Sweet.
So,
good seats for the fight. Obviously, it was definitely not worthy of any controversy this time around, I don't think.
You know what I said after the fight? I was walking out with my one friend. He'd never been to a pro fight before, and he absolutely loved it. He had a blast. My other buddy had a blast. The only fight they'd ever been to were my fight, back to Lock Haven. And I mean, they absolutely had a blast, and they were walking out of there, and they're like, "Man, that was so cool." And the fat now, you know what? They're like, "What do you think compared to the first fight?" I said, "Bradley did better than he did in the first fight, and he still got his ass kicked." But he's honestly 0-2.
Well, he started all right. You know, I thought he had.
He started okay. The first two rounds were close. I mean, he had Pacquiao wobbled in the third round. He hit him with about 30 seconds to go with a right hand and lifted him off his feet. That was the best punch Bradley landed in the whole two fights they had.
You could see that from the audience. Did he lift both feet?
Yeah, my feet weren't that horrible, Rich. I was in the upper level, but I was in the center of the ring.
It was that obvious? I thought it was just cool because they showed it in the replay. I don't think I noticed it during the actual action.
Well, I mean, however, I watched in the replay, too. We had a big screen there. They were showing the fight live as it was going on. But then you could also see the replays between rounds.
Oh, sweet.
So we had the benefit of instant replay.
Well, it was a hell of a fight, I thought, for a little while.
It was very good tonight. It was an entertaining fight. The atmosphere was amazing. I mean, I don't
really
think the videos I posted did it justice.
I really thought Pacquiao showed a more defensive side. I mean, there was a couple points where I thought he could have knocked him out, but he just didn't seem to want to, was my impression. Well, he really had him hurt in the seventh, and I thought he really was going to turn it on at the beginning of the eighth, and he didn't. He just stepped off the gas and just kind of used his speed to get away with the win. And he was very defensive in the later rounds. I think that's what won him the fight, because Bradley was loading up so heavy on every punch.
And maybe he got a little bit gun-shy after the Montez fight. Maybe he got a little bit smarter as he's getting older. And there were times that for me, obviously, is a big knockout loss to Montez. And that's always going to weigh in your mind. Anytime you get hit, you're always going to be like, oh shit. And you're not going to want to get hit. And then at the same time, you can see the guy lays up and it's like, all right, I'm going to pepper him and I'm going to move. I'm going to pepper him and I'm going to move. And that's pretty much what he was doing. And there was sometimes I thought that he was adequately aggressive. If he had Bradley pin on the ropes a few times, but he was firing right at shots. Now, and also gives you a good example of Bradley's chin. I mean, Bradley went down for time to tend to hold. It wasn't like he had that really tough fight of reason for that survivor talk. So he started to pretty good punches. From 140 and 137 pounders. And at one point, Pacquiao tossed a couple of left hands that when I saw him, the exact was kind of facing me. It looked so similar to the big left hand that knocked Ricky Hatton out cold. And Bradley took him well. I mean, there were a couple times that he was cold and he, you know, he got in against the ropes and he got hit. But overall, I mean, he took Pacquiao probably off.
Yeah, I mean, the 8-4 score seemed right to me at the end of it. But there were a lot of rounds where they just didn't engage early on. You could have picked either way, but still, Pacquiao just totally locked it down in the second
Tony, I have to ask you this. Was there a point that you felt, and it's hard to say this in any world title fight, but was there a point that you felt that Pacquiao's victory was inevitable, or do you think there was still some doubt going into the last couple of rounds? What do you think?
Well, decision-wise or just in general with the fight? Like I was watching it, when it came to the scorecards, I remember turning to my friends that were there with me, and I said, all right, Pacquiao clearly won this night. Because, again, I said it the first time, too. This time, even though I felt the fight was closer, I felt Pacquiao was, I don't want to say more dominant.
Hello? Hmm? You still there, Tony? Tony.
Sounds like we've lost him.
Tony.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Oh, there you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you couldn't hear me. I don't know why. I had it on speakerphone, but I was holding it right to my mouth.
Much better.
Okay, well, to answer your question, answer Tom's question. On this fight, it was like the fight was closer by rounds, and I thought Bradley was more competitive. But at the same time, when I thought Pacquiao won the first fight 11 of the 12 rounds, but they were 11 uninspired rounds where he was beating an opponent that was hobbled. This time, I thought Pacquiao was more impressive. He pressed the action more. Feeling that there was any doubt going into the last few rounds, I mean, the way Bradley was throwing haymakers, there was always the possibility that he could catch Pacquiao because he did stun him early in the fight. And when you're in Vegas, you're right. You never know what the judges are going to say until it comes out of the judge's mouth. And then when we heard the decision, we were like, okay, 116, 112, 118, 110. I just remember turning it on one buddy, and I was like, if one of the judges gave, or one or two of the judges gave Bradley 8 rounds, that's pretty sick. If one of the judges gave him 10 of those 12 rounds, that's a fucking travesty. So, to answer your question, when the final bell rang and we heard the first, Michael Buffer say the first score, and he didn't say 116, 112 for Pacquiao or for Bradley, we knew it was unanimous decision. We knew that he wrapped it up.
Yeah.
Well, you can't forget Manny's secret weapon either. I don't know if you got to see in the replays Manny Pacquiao's mom in the stands with the rosary beads, and she looked like she was either rooting really hard for her son or putting a really bad hex on.
I did not see her, but I read about her.
Tom, what do you think as our resident psychic of that behavior?
Well, seriously, hexes are very rare. It's very, very seldom you encounter someone with that ability. But I have heard a few stories about it. And, you know, some of those old women down there in New Orleans or the in Miami, some of them supposedly can, but then again, you know what the kryptonite is for that. Don't accept their power in the first place, okay? That's a little industry secret there. So,
well, you know,
I get the
also showed her hugging Bradley after the fight, you know, after he lost, you know, so she gave him a big hug. It's kind of funny. But during the fight, well, the first time they showed her, she was not only, you know, holding the rosary beads and yelling, but she was pointing her middle finger out straight. So, they showed her again. So she was really going at it, yelling, screaming. And I guess she really gets into it. But, yeah, it was an interesting fight all around.
Can you guys hear me? I'm on the speakerphone again.
Yep.
Okay. I'll tell you what was pretty cool going into the arena. And I got more pictures that I'll be shooting at later, but that I just downloaded these recently. Some I took with my cell phone so I could post them on Facebook live time, like as they were happening. But most of them I took with my camera, and I was just downloading them the other day. But Rich, you were saying about all the Floyd Mayweather in Montana, I guess promotional stuff there.
Right.
And elaborate on that. When you first walked into the MGM Grand, you had a ring set up with like a little lion or whatever in the middle of it, and we all get our pictures with that, and, you know, posing and stuff. And then if you look over to the left, they had a whole wall behind glass with a bunch of Mayweather stuff and his fight outfits from about 6 or 7 of his fights. I say it was a Bela Hoya fight in 07, and I had a sequined red white green sombrero. I had the Ricky Hatton fight, the Victor Ortiz fight, one of his outfits in Dancing with the Stars. They had a lot of cool stuff there. There's definitely a lot of pictures of that. So then we're walking into the arena, because we went into the casino floor for a little bit. We hung out, played a little bit on the slot machines and stuff. So then we go up to the arena. We watched a couple of the preliminary fights and got out some pictures there. And then here comes Kenny Bayless, the referee of the main event. So people are going to be talking. I want to say, dude, who's that? I'm like, that's Kenny Bayless. He's your referee of tonight's fight. So, of course, my little promotional mind gets on.
Yeah, went up in the elevator with Tony Weeks after a fight at the Cosmopolitan.
I go to Kenny Bayless. I can talk to him, of course. I'll sit to one of my fighting unlimited cards, and I said, well, we would love to have you on our show. So we had Steve Snowder on last week. Steve's a very good friend of mine. I said, well, we had the best referee on the East Coast. And you sure how to have him on the best referee on the West Coast.
Yeah, we got, actually, I was thinking, you know, there's some questions that we could have asked Steve. He said he wanted to be on again, so maybe we could get two referees on the same show and kind of talk about some classic referee moments. Like, you know, the one thing I kept thinking of was what would he have done differently in some big situations like the Mayweather-Ortiz fight, big one, and just, you know, some other controversial ones you could think of, and we'll come up with, like, a list and see if they could take us back through it. But that was the big one for me. Not to throw, Joe Cortez on that fight?
Yeah, it was.
Not to throw him under the bus, but then there was the other one, Rancis Bartholomew's ref. Wasn't really as close as Steve usually is when the round ends. You know, he's right next to the fighters all times. That's why he got hit in the face that one time. He's close. So, it'd be interesting to see how that would go. Bayless versus, well, not versus, but Bayless and Smoger giving us the rundown. But I think we're gonna have the Broken Fighter Award this week. We got a lot of broken hands and back injury from a brawl on the set of The Ultimate Fighter in Brazil. Let's see, we got Tyrone Spong in kickboxing had another rubber chicken kick.
Ouch! 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 Yeah, that was awful.
It's kind of like second place to Anderson Silva because it didn't really flex as much, but you could tell in the replay. That's an instant break, and the referee was confused. He didn't know what the hell was going on, but his opponent thankfully backed right off. And just in his own home country there, that's not the way you want to win the fight, and he was very, very classy about that. He was very upset with the whole situation.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was one of the best examples of sportsmanship I've seen in a long time. Pure class. Couldn't have been better.
We got a lot of fights coming up this weekend. Bernard back in action.
Yes, tonight.
And we'll have his last press conference stuff on Fight News Unlimited tonight. We got Bobby Gunn Jr. as our guest coming up in about 12 minutes here, 11 minutes. And I just got some press releases out on the site about his dad, too, doing some bare-knuckle fighting again. Nothing's confirmed yet, but, you know, he put it out there. There's a lot of imitators, just different companies trying to say they're bare knuckle, but it's not really as bare knuckle as he did after so many years where there wasn't any kind of sanctioned combat. He says dating back to Sullivan, John L. Sullivan. So he wants to do it again, apparently. So we'll ask Bobby Jr. about that. Apparently the father's training him a little bit. He had a one-punch knockout, I read, in his very first fight. So he's actually ramping up for a couple quick fights here in the next few months, from what I also read. And we'll talk to him tonight, see what he has to say. But we got a lot of broken hands. Just last night, we had Tim Kennedy fighting Michael Bisping. And Tim Kennedy says he broke his hand, and I was thinking that very early in the fight because he actually did throw some good hands in the first round, but just wanted to do more wrestling because he figured he'd dominate him there and ground and pound him out. But he couldn't do that. So he actually came out here and said, I kind of had to stop being a pussy in the second round. Like, my right hand really hurts. Screw it. I'll just hit him with it. So the second round was me just not being a pussy and just getting my shit together and starting hitting him again. And now he has to get an x-ray on his hand. He thought he broke it in the first round, and I really thought it was peculiar that he wasn't throwing hands at all, like not even left hands, because he had to land on him. But I guess he's just so confident in his right as his knockout punch that he just kept throwing that even though it was hurt. And he really didn't even start throwing lefts until, I think, late in the fight. But just unbelievable effort in that fight. He was pissed at himself after the fact, saying that he threw everything he could possibly throw at Bisping. Bisping took it. And they both kind of buried the hatchet at the end, saying they respected each other, and the whole ramp-up stuff was just water under the bridge and nothing personal, just trying to sell a fight. Bisping said to him.
You know, you got to kind of wonder where Bisping's at now, if he can sort of write this off as my first fight back after a year, and I know I'll do better, or maybe the sun's setting on him a little bit.
Yeah, he's becoming sort of a gatekeeper a little bit. I talked last week, too, about another fighter just retired, Vladimir Matyushenko, just got in a total slugfest and then just fell on the ground and got submitted with the Mexicutioner.
Yeah, I was surprised to see it end like that. I was very surprised with that ending.
I was really disgusted by that whole fight, though. I mean, I just really thought neither guy tried to do anything but punch each other in the head, and they didn't have any defense, and I almost thought, like, none of those guys should be fighting because they have not evolved.
That was a very good point. And then I believe they were talking about Joey Beltran was training for his first pro boxing fight. Well, he better stay in the gym quite a while before he even thinks of getting into a boxing ring, my opinion.
Yeah, he took a lot of shots on the way to getting that win. Mandyshenko just basically tired himself out, but he didn't do much better. I mean, he was just the same old, you know, 1-2 punch and, you know, maybe a hook and try to survive. And he kept leaving himself wide open. And head movement, aggression, and it just caught up to him. But they were both at points trying to treat it into a slugfest, and they're at the age in their careers where they really shouldn't be doing that. It's like,
yeah, exactly. And I think that Mandyshenko maybe showed a few more kicks than he did 10 years ago, but I would agree with you. In essence, he really didn't evolve too much. So.
And then we had, as I mentioned earlier, Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva, of course, got into a little brawl, and Chael took him right down on his back right away. And this was at the weigh-in for one of their fighters, two of their fighters having a fight on the episode. And there was actually talk a few days before this story came out of Chael calling out Rich Franklin for Rich's, what I think is going to be Rich's final fight, because he said he wants one more fight. So I thought something was up then, and then you find out, not only did he hurt his back, he hurt his hand too, another broken hand or busted hand. I don't know if it's broken, but so Wanderlei is going to be out for a while. And they're trying to say it's still going to be on their fight on July 5th. We'll see if that really happens. And also, Big Country, Tony's favorite MMA fighter, broke his hand. knocking out Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira is no joke. I mean, that guy's got a solid skull on him. And Roy Nelson rattled him all over the ring, the cage. And that was actually probably the most impressive I've seen Roy with his boxing in a long, long time. And actually, I have heard him say before he works a lot with Roger Mayweather. Jeff Mayweather, I think, is his guy. Jeff Mayweather. I hadn't seen him when I did the Floyd Mayweather stuff over there when I was in Vegas, but I believe it. He looked pretty good out there. And if you look at his last, like, almost his last 10 wins, most of them were first-round knockouts. So I think he's starting to realize that that's what he's got to do. He's just got to blitzkrieg people and take them out in the first round. And he did that really well with Nogueira. I don't think Nogueira was ready for that kind of fight. He thought he could maybe wrestle him or pull off something like Junior Dos Santos. But, no, didn't work out that way for him. And we also had Clay Guida got a pretty much all wrestling, grappling, unanimous decision there on Tatsuya Kawajiri. Guy I met in person in Boston and interviewed on this radio show. John Howard lost by decision to Ryan LaFlair, who remained undefeated there. Ramzi Nijem caught Benil Dariush with some punches in the first round, the 420 mark there in the first round. Jared Rosholt beat Daniel Omelancic by unanimous decision. Talis Leites was, I think, pretty much known for his grappling and jiu-jitsu. He actually beat Trevor Smith by a knockout in 45 seconds. In the second fight of the night, Jim Alias beat Alan Omer by split decision. And then we had Johnny Bedford and Ronnie Iyer. It was a no contest because of an accidental clash of heads in the first round. We had Patrick Cote, actually, last night on that co-main event with Bisping and Tim Kennedy. Ended up beating up on Kyle Noak for unanimous decision. Also, Elias Theodoro beat Sheldon Westcott by TKO. Split decision win for Chad LaPrice over Oliver Alden Mercier. We had Dustin Poirier, Kira Khorasani by TKO in the second round there. Sam Stout and KJ Nunes. A couple guys who like to throw punches. Nunes won that one by KO in the first round. 30 seconds then. So he didn't waste any time. Sarah Kaufman had a unanimous decision win over Leslie Smith. We had Ryan Jimmo won by knockout over Sean O'Connell. George Roop beat Dustin Kimura by unanimous decision, not by Kimura submission. Mark Bocek beat Mike De La Torre by split decision. Nordine Taylor beat Vic Rujic by unanimous decision. Richard Walsh beat Chris Indich by unanimous decision. And Mitch Gagnon beat Tim Gorman by unanimous decision. I really didn't watch much of it except for the main event and the Patrick Cote fight, which I kind of knew was going to go to Cote, and he looked really good. Noakes just did all he could to survive the fight.
Yeah, this was a very tough season for the Australians. Just not much positive they can take out of it.
Right. Well, I am going to get Bobby Gunn Jr. on the phone. Comes up. Well, what's going on? Well, we got to get him on a second here. But, we also got some big Bellator events coming up this weekend. We got Mike Tyson. His company's debuting on cable TV. That's a big one. It's going to be tomorrow night after we got another Friday night fights going on. Tomorrow night. I guess it's going to be in the earlier hours. They usually start around 9. If they're on an early version, then Showtime Showbox comes on at 10:45, and that's Mike Tyson's guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out. I mean, if you really like fights, you can watch them all day tomorrow and night. And you also get Bellator. They get another event coming up tomorrow. Tony, you still with us?
Still with you, Bill.
What do you think about Bernard Hopkins' fight this weekend?
Well, every time you get a guy that's close to 50 years old, I mean, you never know when father time's going to catch up with him. It's funny, I remember back over 12 years ago now when he was fighting Felix Trindade, a fight that Steve Mosley was talking about last week. And I remember in the 7th round, I think it was the 6th round, when Trindade really made his big push at the end. Not at the end, but it was a big push to really start taking over the fight. And I remember George Foreman was one of the people that, you know, was 2 years older than Hopkins at the time when he made his comeback. Hopkins was 36. And Foreman's like, you know, Hopkins' old man, he's got to wear out on him. You can see feel his legs are going to touch the belly on him. But sure, you were 3-5 when you won the title. What are you talking about? But at that time, because you thought then, not only am I going to be investing up there, and it didn't. And 13 years later, I mean, he's still going strong. So you get a fighter that he's going against here that, you know, Shumov, I think his name is, Virat Shumov. You don't really know a lot about the guy. Same thing, you didn't know a lot about Karo Murat when they were fighting. The guy's got a title. Shumov's got a title. The unification fight, which is just put Bernard in another class, being the oldest guy to ever unify a title. He's the oldest guy to ever win a title fight. So, Shumov is a steady, unspectacular type fighter. He's not a big puncher. He's not tremendously fast. He's kind of a plodding, aggressive kind of guy, which is usually the kind of guy that Bernard eats up. He's able to fight with Kelly Pavlik or Felix Trinidad. You're always a big puncher that he fought a couple times. Antoine Eccles. Guys who come straight in, like to throw a lot of bombs. Even last year, when he won the title, he's like Ian Glenn Johnson, kind of a fighter that Bernard just ate alive. And is this going to be another example of Bernard taking a young guy and just taking him to school? We'll see. What are we going to see? Him getting old again. I think what we're going to see here is a 12-round fight. Hopkins he doesn't knock anybody out anymore. He hasn't scored a shot in almost 10 years. And so I think what we're going to look at here is Hopkins rubbing off a little bit slow. It's been sloppy times, getting rough times. And then Hopkins really taking over down the stretch and winning a close but unanimous decision.
All right. Wow. Have we got a funny message from a guy the other day too. Turns out the guy had
Hello. Wait, hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. What's up, buddy?
Hey, it's Rich. Rabble Rousing Rich.
What's up, man?
Here. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line.
Yeah, what's up, Tony?
So if you want to know what's going down in your next 7 fights, you can ask Psychic Tom Padgett.
Good evening, Bobby.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Good. Looking forward to it.
So, Bobby, I know it was not that much to tell, but give us a rundown of your very first pro fight.
My very first pro fight, it was a 40-second knockout. It felt really good. My next fight's going to be the 26th, so, I know not every fight's going to be a knockout. I want to get some rounds in, too, and get some experience. But, getting a quick knockout was a really good way to start it.
Cool. So how long have you actually been working in the gym and trying to get the boxing blood flowing?
Oh, I've been boxing, since I could walk. I've never really remember a time in my life not having gloves. Always going to the gym with my dad. It's born into me, bred into me, and, trained into me.
Sweet. And your dad's still training you now?
Yeah, Dad's still training me. I have a strength and condition coach, now. That's a little bit hard. But Dad's my number one trainer.
Awesome. Now, what's your favorite punch so far?
My favorite punch is my left hook. It should be my jab. My dad's going to kill me for that one, but my left hook's my favorite.
Hey, that's not bad. That was my second favorite behind the jab when I boxed, so.
Oh, was it? Yeah, that's the money punch.
I'm a Philadelphia born raised, and when I started boxing, I was a teenager at the time, and I had a video of great heavyweight punches, and Jeff Frazier was on there. And they were talking about his Philadelphia left hook. I said, well, my mindset was, I'm from Philadelphia, I have to throw a left hook. And I was standing in front of the guy. I wasn't even trained. I had my own heavy bag, and I'd be standing in front of this tower, saying left, 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 left. Then it got to the point where, I really started boxing, they had to re-actually establish my right hand because I never feel it. And they're like, yeah, you watch too many good things, you know, to be better than yourself right hand. You're right-handed. So, yeah, I'm a left-hand guy.
Okay, thank you. So, what do you do in training? What would you say is the number one thing you do to get ready for a fight?
You know, I get ready for a fight. You know, I've always worked hard, but getting the strength and conditioning guy was really good for me. I got some cardio in. You know, I've been running a lot of miles, a lot of new workouts. So it's something new, but I like seeing the results. So it's really fun to do, too.
Well, actually, you know, road work is pretty big. We actually had a guy on who was best friends with Rocky Marciano. And he told us some stories about those guys running in dress shoes.
Oh, yeah, those guys, they were danced up a storm, probably.
Like Boston to Crawford. So these guys ran everywhere they went. And that was one of the big differences, why he had so much power and such a light weight. He was only 85 to 189 for most of his fight.
Yeah, well, he was technically a light heavyweight, cruiserweight kind of guy. He wasn't even heavyweight.
Right, so... That was one of his secrets. Doing a lot of running.
I heard he had big hands, though, didn't he?
Yeah, that too. He played a lot of baseball. That was enough.
Yeah, I heard he was a bad catcher. He wasn't no good at it, though, wasn't he?
Not good enough to go to the pro, but
yeah,
he was all right. I think that's pretty good.
He never had a good enough arm to throw guys out.
Yeah, that's it. Knock him out. But anyway, Bobby, what are you doing for your next few fights here? I hear you're looking at a couple quick opportunities to get a couple fights in, right?
Yeah, I'm going to try to stay busy this year, guys. I got a fight to 26, so 9 more days, and then I'm going to try to get on a card before that. I mean, not before that, I mean after that, I'm sorry. And then I got a fight definitely signed the 31st in Jersey, so that's my homecoming fight. And I'm really looking forward to that one.
What's going on with your dad and the bare knuckle stuff? I hear he's getting ramped up for another bout there.
Right now, they're in talks right now with Kimbo Slice, and you know, not just saying that. Even if he wasn't my dad, to me, that'd be a good enough fight. You know, I think both guys need it, and both guys want it, and you know, it should get done pretty soon, hopefully. But it'd be a really good fight, and it would skyrocket bare knuckle boxing.
A Kimbo Slice, huh? Wow.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
I got to ask Kimbo a question once on a conference call years ago when he first got into MMA. And, I asked him, son, what's his ultimate goal or something like that, and he goes, it's all about the paper.
No, did he? Well, I don't think he's making the paper anymore. I think his boxing career is not going that good, is it? He hasn't fought in about a year, I think.
Yeah, and his last couple fights were close to, you know, exposing his...
Yeah, they were
pretty bad.
Dead struggles for guys he should have beat, yeah.
Yeah.
I've said this on the show for a couple of years now when Kimbo first started getting into boxing. I wrote a column about 5 or 6 years ago saying if he didn't fight, I only did about 7 or 8. But it was different fighters from different eras. And I was asking people, give me matchups you'd like to see. And the first thing I said was, don't give me any guy that is a mixed martial artist until he has a sanctioned boxing match. Because everybody kept saying to me, Tyson and Kimbo, what would have happened in their prime? And I said, then Rich said to me, because if Kimbo had a professional fight now will you make that matchup? And I said, Rich, I really don't have to. I'll tell you what happened. Prime Mike Tyson and prime Kimbo Slice, Tyson goes to jail for murder. I said, Mike Tyson, Tyson goes to jail for murder. But I said, if I was Kimbo's management, and even though Tyson was retired, he would be the name I would keep calling out. Because from watching Kimbo, you put him in there, anybody would be no problem. He's taking the part. He's big, straightforward, he's straight shoulders, he can punch, but he has no technique and no stamina. This one of those guys that, you know, will stand right in front of him and he can knock out. I say, get him in there with Tyson as soon as possible and draw up as much money as you can. Because you got Kimbo with the MMA crossover, and people know who he is in the internet crossover. you got Tyson, you got people that remember him growing up like I did. You get people like my father that were an adult, but they still remember him. And you get young kids that know him from when he appeared at, like, WrestleMania a couple years ago or did the Hangover movie. They know who Mike Tyson is. So you have a lot of different demographics that would buy this fight. And they would get his ass knocked out for the most part, you know, unless Tyson really, you know, really fell way, way, way down the totem pole. But people would make a lot of money. That would be his best option, but it's never going to happen. So, first guy, and I've talked to your father. I've seen your father fight. Some of the guys that stand toe-to-toe with guys like Glenn Johnson and really good fighters like that, he murders him this fight.
Yeah, and he's definitely got a bad knee, so he doesn't want to do kickboxing.
Definitely not.
like Riddick Bowe did, that was pretty bad.
Oh, I heard he had a Muay Thai fight or something like that. That was crazy.
Yeah, they just kicked him relentlessly in the legs.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Yeah, fuck. But Bobby, how about who are your favorite fighters that you like to watch now?
My favorite fighters right now, it's probably obvious everyone likes them. I'm a big Canelo fan. You know, I remember watching him when I was about 15 years old, and I seen him on HBO fighting Miguel Cotto's brother. And, you know, for me, I've boxing I've always loved, but when I seen that, you know, that kind of opened the doors for me, and I was like, if he can do it, I can do it. So, you know, that's been my motivation all along.
And what is your ultimate goal with boxing?
Ultimate goal is to get a strap on my My ultimate goal is to get a strap around my waist. That's the dream I want. And, you know, if I can help some kids and motivate them, you know, that my goal is done. But I want to be a world champion more than anything.
Awesome. And obviously your dad's been a role model. Do you have any other role models? And can you talk a little bit about that, how he's helped you through the, you know, going pro and all that?
My dad's definitely been a big help, and, you know, a lot of people ask me, what's my advantage over younger fighters coming up? And, you know, my dad was a world title holder himself, and he fought multiple world champions, so, you know, that's experience you can't buy. And that really helped me a lot, having, you know, a dad that loves me and cares for me, and, you know, most importantly, he's in my corner. And that experience he has, he's going to bring it to me, and I'm going to do what my dad should have done when he was younger. Because my dad hurt his foot when he was younger. And that took him out for about, you know, 8 years, and he had to fight the, you know, bare-knuckle boxer and all that. But, you know, I'm the same weight as my dad, and I'm going to finish what he started.
And who out there would you most like to fight right now?
Most like to fight, I'm not one of those, you know, guys that like calling out names. Right now I just want to get, you know, my first couple fights over with. And, you know, when the opportunities come, you know, I'm ready.
Tom, you got any questions?
Well, Bobby, I love your approach to things because it seems like you're just taking it one fight at a time, and you also have your big goals, but it seems like you're really doing a good job at breaking them down into smaller goals, you know, and just focusing on what's immediately ahead of you. And my question here about training, I know that your dad probably worked with you on a lot of the old school training methods. And then you said you've got a strength and conditioning coach. Now, does he kind of work with some of the newer stuff also, or do you have a blend, like the old school, new school?
It's a little bit of a blend. You know, the new school stuff, I'm so used to doing everything that shows me, but the new school stuff is like, I'll give you an example. You ever see, like, the anchor ropes, you know, the ropes for the ships?
Right.
I'm doing a lot of, like, cardio workouts with them, and that's really good for my arms. And then, you know, I'm trying to get my stamina up a little bit. And,
right.
You know, getting the new strength and conditioning coach was definitely a big help. I can see a really big difference in myself.
How about the human punching bag?
Oh, the human punching bag? Yeah, hopefully he comes in Saturday.
Yeah, but I really think
I couldn't
that's a good
that.
Approach. Yeah, I definitely think that's a good approach because the old school stuff works, but sometimes you can tweak things a bit. And just to keep you from going stale, you know, just stuff like plyometrics and, you know, just a little different. But I think sometimes people decide they want to either do one approach or the other, and I don't think that's right, because I think you should keep your mind open to the new stuff, but don't forget that the guys in the old days went 15 rounds, and they did very basic stuff, just doing their road work and the bag work, you know what I'm saying, rope skipping and everything, and it worked pretty good for them. So just stick with the old, but add some too. I think that's the approach. It sounds like you've got that approach.
Exactly. Thank you again. Thank you.
And what else can you tell us about, what you're planning for your next fight or your next couple fights here?
The next couple fights is, most importantly, I want to take one fight at a time. I got the 26th and then the 31st, so, if I can get a couple rounds in, that'd be really nice. I have enough experience. I'm not stupid, I'm not going to go in there going for the kill the first round, but, my main goal is get wins, and hopefully by the end of the year, guys, God willing, maybe I could be 6-7, 8-0, and that's my main goal this year.
And how do people find you online out there? I know I got friends with you
online. Until I get a name, I'll be on Twitter. I want the blue check mark. But right now, I'm just on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, Twitter is big these days, I keep reading more and more, and at least in MMA, about fighters calling each other out on Twitter, so it's kind of amazing that it's come to that.
I'll have a lot of human punching bags on Twitter, so I'm going to stay a little bit off that.
For those of you who don't know, this is kind of an inside joke, because, I just mentioned Facebook, and he put up a post on Facebook of a contact he got from somebody that literally wanted him to treat him like a human punching bag. The comment, some people have some weird-ass fetishes, and then all of a sudden the comments come in saying, oh, this guy has done this before.
Yes. Can you repeat that? What was the guy saying?
He wanted to be a human punching bag, literally.
I got messages from that guy. Bobby, let me ask you. What's going on? Do you box? And he kept me the same questions, do you box? How many knockouts? Ever knock somebody out? Then it's like, would you mind using me as a human punching bag? I'll pay you to do it, and I'll sign a waiver.
He's had a lot of contacts with people, I guess.
Yeah,
the waiver sounded nice. Maybe we might be doing it Saturday, hopefully, if he pays for it.
That is too funny, Whatever. Whatever it takes to get an inch. I guess it's better than punching a side of beef. Safer for your hands, too. Oh, unbelievable. But yet so believable. My old creative writing teacher used to say, fact is stranger than fiction. Yeah. Bobby, what do you think about boxing today? It's obviously a very different sport than when your dad was, in his prime, going toe-to-toe and fighting for belts. It's a little different now. There's a lot of belts out there, a lot of different organizations. What do you think about the sport in general?
Well, thank God I have a dad that showed me all the great fighters in the 80s and stuff. You look at the 80s, there was one world champion, you know what I mean?
Right.
And now there's so many titles. I remember watching Martinez. He had the silver title, the WBC silver title, and Chavez was the WBC world champion. It's insane. There's too many titles these days. But, at the end of the day, a title's a title, I guess. So, whatever title I get is going to be a blessing for me. But my main goal is to get the world. That's my main goal.
What do you love most about the sport?
What I love most about the sport is, there's a lot of leeches in the sport, and a lot of promoters are kind of ruining the sport, too. You have the top-ranking Golden Boy, best few, and that's kind of silly. What I love most about the sport, though, for me, it might be a little odd, is I think it's the brotherhood. The other day I was sparring this guy, and we had a really good war, and it's just at the end of the round, like it was all done, we gave each other a hug, And, like, even at my last fight, my knockout, we gave each other a hug. It's just like the brotherhood. And you carry those memories, and those are things you're going to remember for the rest of your life. So, you know, I think it's the brotherhood in boxing.
Tony, we can barely hear you. You got to speak up, buddy.
I see it. I know there's a guy that trained 20 years ago. And, I mean,
Tony! Tony! Change your audio. What's
that? Hey,
Tony!
Yeah.
You got to talk real loud. Your feet.
When,
Tony? You're still in Vegas. Are you at the casino?
You're not. I came back before I got work.
There it is. You're loud now.
No, I was just saying, you know, there were guys, I mean, with the brotherhood comment, I agree with that 100%, because there were guys that I trained with many years ago that I still touch base with, guys that I had standing ovation wars in a Philadelphia gym, and we beat the hell out of them. And when you're at that brotherhood, because you know, you got in there and you proved your mettle, but you proved it as a man, because they go behind the back. It was really, you know, gang war and gang bang, and it was mano a mano, and you earned your respect.
Exactly. Now we have a lot of punks like Adrian Broner. Oh, I don't like all that garbage.
Yeah, how about Kovalev calling Stevenson a piece of shit?
Well, I'm not going to lie, I did like that. He is a piece of shit. that was a fight, you know, believe it or not, I wanted to see that fight more than Pacquiao Mayweather. That would have been a great, great fight.
Yeah, that was strange how that all ended. One guy signed with Al Haymon and then forget about it.
Exactly.
Another bad thing in the sport.
You know, Bobby, there's an old cliche that boxing is a lot more mental than most people think. And you've been around the game long enough that you know that a lot of times your mindset's so important. Now, do you address that issue specifically in your training, or do you let the technique and physicality handle it, or is there anything in particular you do for your mental edge?
The mental edge, you know, when I was younger, I had a problem. In the amateurs, I was a big puncher. And, you know, in sparring, I go in for the kill. And, you know, there's a lot of days where you're going to look sloppy, and I'm not going to lie, I was discouraged. You know, and as I got on, I really sharpened up. You know, I haven't had to worry about the mental part as much. But, you know, I've only had one pro fight, so, you know, the mental part's definitely, for me, that's the biggest part. You know, confidence is the biggest part for me. Because if my confidence is low, then I don't do any good.
Yeah, and I think maybe the best thing you can do is just make sure that your conditioning is 100%, that you've really trained hard, you know, you haven't cut any corners, and then the confidence is really there, I think. That's so important because you can't get in there. If you're cutting corners and your opponent's not, this is the wrong sport to be doing that. You know what I mean.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, I actually was watching some kickboxing this weekend, and it was a kickboxer who had the same situation where his father was his trainer. And the interviewer asked him a good question. And he said, what's the best and the worst thing about having your father involved in the training? I'll give you his answer later, but how about yours first?
My answer, I think the worst thing is your dad wants you to be perfect. He wants the best for you. He wants the ultimate best for you. And I respect that, and I love my dad, and I'm not going to, you know, lie to you and say, oh, it's easy, it's a great, you know, relationship. It's very hard, and then also I have the bastard out to work, too. I have to go to the gym with him and work with him. So, but, you know, I'm close to my dad. I love him, and, you know, how can I explain it? It's not the easiest thing, but it works.
Well, this guy said, you know, the best thing is he knows everything about the sport, but the worst thing is I get it at home, too. I don't leave the gym, you know, it's at home. When I go home, he's always around me, always talking about fighting.
Oh, my God, I have him at home, I have him out to work, because me and my dad do construction together. I have him out to work. I have him at home. I have him at boxing gym. It doesn't end.
Wow. She's a good role model for you, right?
Exactly, yep.
All right. Well, is there anybody you want to thank or give a shout-out to before we let you go?
I just want to give a shout-out to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and I want to thank you guys tonight for taking the time and doing this with me. You guys are gentlemen, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, definitely. Be happy to have you on when you're coming up on your first championship, something like that. We'll get you on, or even before that, maybe.
And if you have any more human sparring partners, send them over to Global Boxing. have a good night, guys.
It's gonna be the
All right, Bobby. Good luck.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch and we'll keep plugging your whatever you're got going on there. Best of luck with you.
Thanks, Rich. Bye, bye.
You too. Have a good one. And here we have it. There's Bobby Gunn Jr. So we had both the father and the son on. Bobby Gunn Senior, last time we had him on was months ago, I think. He had a boxing match coming up. Maybe a year ago. Maybe at least a year ago. But actually, I was thinking the other day, Tony, since you and I have been doing the show, we have interviewed a shitload of big-name fighters. If I ever went back and got the highlights from all those and put them on a CD, and we just sell those on the show here. We could make a good amount of money just doing that.
You know what?
The greatest. I have it all on these computers, like right next to me. It's all there. And I just bought a brand new, like, 160 something gigabyte zip drive. So I could literally take all those files, even the ones that are no longer accessible on the net now, from the beginning, like in 2006. All that stuff. And the one clip I want to get, this made me think of it because I was getting these clips today for the Pacquiao fight. I don't know if you got to hear it, Tom. This one. Did you hear that, Tom?
I could hear it, just couldn't really make it out. It wasn't too clear.
Well, let's try the extended version. Did you hear that one?
Yeah, okay, that was a little better.
Yeah, that was Joel Diaz between the 6th and the 7th round of the Manny Pacquiao fight, where he asked him if he wanted to go fucking home right now. Because he says his leg was hurt. Whatever. I don't know if he meant his leg at that point, but he just said, I'm hurt. But anyway, if we get one clip I was thinking about getting the other day from one of our old shows was when we had Michael Moore on. And I asked him something about George Foreman and what that felt like in that fight. And he said, you know, I was so many seconds away from it being the Michael Moore grill.
Oh, that's good.
Gotta get that clip.
You actually had me on as a guest a couple times before I came on as the co-host. And I've been a co-host for almost 6.5 years now. I haven't missed a show yet, knock on wood. And some of the names I can remember, the big names I remember talking to, boxing-wise, in 3 weeks in a row, we had Whitaker, Ray Mercer, Roy Jones, 388 Olympians in there. We had obviously my favorite one to get on was Jimmy Paz when I was able to get him on. Like, he was one of the first guests that I booked. I know he's not a big name coming up. He's more into a clothing line now, but Simon One Punch Carr. He was the first guest I ever booked just because I knew you could get him on the show. We could literally, Tom, this is back in the day when we would stay as long as we wanted. And seriously, when we were getting the time on the show, we had to make one question. We put our phones down and let him go for 3 hours. He's like, he talks like Bernie Hawkins.
I was actually surprised. I recognized the voice when he was commentating this weekend, but I was like, wait a second, he's talking so slow. Roy Jones. I could not believe it.
Right.
What he was like without him. He was getting so much in. And one of my favorite questions for him was when I asked him if he remembered his very first fight. I think I had to repeat the question because he didn't understand what I was saying, but I got across him. I said, hell yeah, I remember that. He told us the whole little story about how I think he knocked the kid out.
I remember the first question I asked Roy Jones was, the first thing I said to him was more of a statement. I said, Roy, I said, when we had the 3 '88 Olympians in a row, Ray Mercer, who was a gold medalist, Riddick Bell, who had lost to Lennox Lewis by stoppage in the finals, and Roy Jones, who should have been a default gold medalist because he was robbed so bad. And I said, Roy, I said, how did you pretty much feel to be ripped off so bad and you had to change the entire way Olympic boxing was run? I said, couldn't you knock that career boy out and save us all the misery?
Yeah.
And he had to laugh about it. You know, Roy was really down to earth. He was a great interview. Iceman John Scully's always been great. Then we had, you know, some good guys in the animation. I don't know them as much, but, you know, we had Ken Samath on there. We had, I always call it Big Punches because the man cracked me up.
Steve Barwood, Mel Bernstein they had on already.
Todd Bernstein was a great interview. I'll tell you who's the worst interview I ever had. Tom, I'll tell you who's terrible was, what was his name? Weston.
Weston,
sucks. Tom was the first week I did.
He was trying to get rid of us, I think.
He
was just being a jerk the whole time.
He was being a dick. It was like, Tom, this is literally the first show I did. It's like me 2 or 3 times that I was a guest. And I'm actually still hosting. Back in the time, I would write down questions. I think about his baby guy. And I would write down questions. Now, I feel I'm better now doing improv. You know, I just touch and counter. I know a lot enough about the guys that I can ask questions and counter off what they say. I want to ask you a question. And he's like, do you hear that echo? Hello, 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 hello. And it kept coming out over and over. And then it was he'd answer something else, and he goes, how did you train on this? I didn't train on this. I was just picking up girls. I'm just training on pussy. And then he just keep going over and over. It was almost like talking to a 10-year-old, to be honest.
Yeah, I think he had to hit the sauce that night.
Yeah.
We also, I think, we had an interview with Roy Nelson back when he was with the IFL. I remember one night on a podcast show, I think we had him on. So we got a lot of stuff. Bruce Buffer,
Bruce Buffer, I remember he did the announcement like we were going to fight.
Right, and
yeah.
We were only allowed to use it for one show, though, which sucked.
Yeah, I remember.
Because that show is no longer accessible anymore. But, anyway,
I'll tell you it was a great interview like 2 years ago when we had Diamond Dallas Page. The wrestler.
Today, too, because I saw him on an infomercial the other day. DDPU infomercials.
I got to get back into my DDP yoga. Hadn't done in a while. So I'll tell you, he had me last so hard. I mean, I'm sitting right now at my desk and, you know, sitting here and, you know, having stuff up on my computer so we can talk about it. But Diamond, DDP, had me actually on the floor in a fetal position, laughing so hard that I had tear streams out of my eyes.
Yeah, he had the best farewell line, too. He's like, hey, guys, it's been your pleasure.
Yeah, right. And that's how you can finish all these wrestling interviews.
Yeah.
Like, you know, thank you very much. It's been your pleasure. I had read about him, you know, before. Like, I had followed him a little bit, but I really, really became a fan when I was reading the book that Mick Foley wrote, especially his first one. And he was sitting there and saying that this guy is like a walking, talking cartoon character with catchphrases and just
he's always just saying, like, the crazy shit that, like, how's your take on it? Lady, I'll tell you right now, if it's going any better, I'll give you two people just to handle it. And the day that we interviewed him, just by coincidence, I just happened to pick up one of the mixed books that I own. The very first one, I'll Have a Nice Day, it came out, I think, 98 or 99. I think it was 99 it came out. And I picked it up, and I just picked up a random open page, and it was talking about Mick was when he was at WCW, and he was pretty much broke, and he was talking about three wrestlers that were really not making it. Himself, Diamond Dallas Page, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. At the time, all three of them were like bottom of the totem pole guys, and they were rooming together because they were so broke. And they're always playing pranks on DDT, so you get like all fired up. And the first thing they did was they hit all the pals on them and he got pissed off. Then he went down to get paste or something, and somebody brought him a batch of chocolate chip cookies and they put him in his bed. And they're like, and DDT, he's naked. And he's just laying there, and the next thing you know, he's like, put cookies in my bed, god damn it. And so I'm reading this story, and it's funny. So even more than that night, I'm like, I have to ask you the first question. I said, listen, I'm reading Mick Foley's Have a Nice Day today, and I literally read the cookie story. Please tell us your version of it. You stop. And basically, is, am I allowed to curse? He's like, this is a rated R show. He's like, thank fucking God. He's like, those motherfuckers. And he's just sitting there and he's like, I'm in there. I'm like, kid. Fucking cookies in my bed, you motherfucker, and he's going off, and I'm starting to die, he keeps saying this, and then he's like, well, I took a bunch of these cookies and I threw them up on top of Foley, and I'm jumping on them, and I'm trying to land them into them, I'm like, how do you like these fucking cookies on you, you motherfucker, he goes, boy, it's not a bad one to tear ass on me. When he said that, I was done, I thought I couldn't continue the interview.
Yeah, that was a great interview. I'm looking forward to the great interview. Yeah, yeah, I can start writing the list, Tony. Keep sending names to me. What's yours? Okay, I will. I'll try to think of the best. Here's Chavo Taylor. There's a two-second to go in the fight. Two seconds from glory is his call. Chavo Taylor. All they want to talk about.
I just want to talk about that, you know, mainly because I'm a Taylor fan, and I don't want to rehash any memories from when I was 13 years old and watching that fight and praying for Meldrick to make that last round. And I wanted to ask him what it was like to be the referee of Haniel Hearn.
Well, he kind of came out with that first, too, because I asked him, you know, what are his favorite moments, and that was one of them.
Yeah, well, as well as good then. And I remember when Tommy met me the other day, commenting on the entrance video from the Pacquiao fight, and he says you must have been good watching a lot of those old clips on the big screen before the fighters made their entrance. There's too many great memories there.
Yeah, I was really pissed one time when I wrote a nice interview from a segment we had with Richard and. I pitched it to a guy who had taken all kinds of other interviews, and he said he didn't want it because he wasn't enough of a, you know, big star for him. And I was like, are you kidding me? You know, he had taken all kinds of other boxing interviews. He didn't want that one for some reason. Maybe he held that fight against him.
Well, some people are stupid, you know, and they don't know what they're missing.
Yeah, especially, you know, if you really know his history, the different people that he came up with and he actually fought himself with. You hear a lot about guys who used to box, you know, just because they used to box. Even a little politician like Harry Reid, he used to box, you know, but he wasn't known for it. And Richard Steele actually had a pretty big boxing career for a guy who, you know, won any championships. Pretty decent. Probably, you know, better experience than most referees for sure. And then on top of that, he's seen all those fights, including Magda Hearns. So. Ain't nothing to shake a stick at. Anyway, Nick Diaz was actually at the fight, same fight as you, Tony. I'm surprised you didn't run into him. wants to go into a boxing match, and he wants out of his UFC contract so he can do it. So that's why he was watching boxing. He's trying to absorb some knowledge, I guess. I don't like his boxing style myself. I think he would get hit with a lot of straight punches because he likes to loop those hands a lot and doesn't show very sound defense, let's say.
I would definitely agree with you, Rich. I don't think the Stockton slap's going to work in a boxing ring.
Heard.
But it's up to him to prove us wrong. Maybe he will, but right now I just don't see it. He's going to have to really modify his style.
Yep. That's the bottom line. Now, I sent you guys the link. I'm not sure if both of you saw it, but what do you think about this Baranjo flop here, I guess we'll call it, like the Fosberg flop. This guy that was in between rounds and flopped off his stool.
Oh, my God.
MMA fights. And they let it continue. You saw that, right, guys?
Yeah, I watched. I didn't
see,
but I saw that, and that was actually
kind of
scary.
And we actually had Matt Manzanares as a guest before on this show, the other guy. He beat this guy in the fight, but what happened was prior to the end of the round, he got caught in a chokehold and barely got out. This was at the end of the fourth round of this fight. And then during the break between the fourth and fifth rounds, he literally blacks out, fall sideways off his stool, totally unconscious. Only people that are around and paying attention, and even they're pretty far away, is his corner people. So they pick him up off the ground, slap him around a little bit, and get him back out there. Unbelievable. But he got back out there and he finished the fight somehow. But basically, his doctor came over, asked his corner if he was okay to continue, and they said, yep, we're good. Yep. No problem. But they have a televised, actually, feed of it. And there's a GIF file of this whole thing. And they say it only was 10 seconds, but I don't care how long it is. If a guy blacks out, that's really the worst thing you can do, even if you want him to, you know, go out there and live up to what he trained for or whatever. At that point, you know, you have to really think of his safety. That's not very safe to send the guy back.
This is definitely not a movie. Now in the movie, I'm sure that would work pretty good, but this is not a movie.
The thing is, it's another one of those situations where either a referee has to be looking out for stuff like that, or you have to have officials. And I noticed, actually, the very next fight that I watched, the very last fight that I was watching, the other night, there was an official right next to the person on the stool. Like, an official with a jacket. Standing right there. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that now. Because you see on either side of him, there is nobody with any authority standing in the cage. It's just his corner people. And they're like 3 feet from him.
I would be curious to see if he sticks with that management team, if they had like some kind of unwritten rule that I don't care what happens, don't stop this. I mean, it'd be really interesting if he reviews the films of that and see where he's going to be going.
Better officiated, sure. We talked a little bit about this before the show, but I'd like to get everybody's kind of take on this whole thing. We actually got it out of Bobby Gunn Jr. too, that Golden Boy Promotions and Top Rank, their war is still going on. There's a big thing, too, with Al Heyman. Now, everybody he snatches up turns against HBO, it seems. But they're calling it actually here Boxing's Cold War. I guess they're not punching each other, but there were some articles this week about Bob Arum being very pissed at the MGM Grand for having all kinds of posters up for this Maidana Mayweather fight on May 3rd. And he didn't pull any punches even at the last press conference. He had a lot of crap to say. And then, of course, Floyd Mayweather's team fired back. Leonard Ellerbe said, we put on the biggest events. Their fight is not even sold out. He also said, you can go online and get tickets anywhere. The difference is that this morning we were over $14 million for the gate. People come to see Floyd Mayweather fight in big events. That's why we do the kind of numbers that we do. But I'm not saying, here to say anything negative about their event. They're going to have a good event. Both fighters are very, very good, and we wish them the best. And Bob Arum, during his last press conference, said in the Venetian, they wouldn't make a mistake like this. They knew that fight was scheduled in 3 or 4 days, and they wouldn't have a 12-1 December 1st fight all over the building that's going to take place 3 weeks from next Saturday. He was pissed off. Kept saying that. He also said the president of hanging posters and decorations for the wrong fight when he introduced Richard Sturm, who's the president of MGM Grand Entertainment and Sports president. Then he said to somebody, why don't you ask the guy whose picture is up all over the building, Mayweather, when he's going to fight somebody real? And then also, he actually finished the whole thing with, if whatever I said was incendiary, I'm an old guy and I apologize. He played the old guy card.
Yeah.
Here's a sort of interesting boxing story for the women's boxing circles. Holly Holm just broke her arm in her last fight, so kind of killed all the talk about coming back to MMA or getting the Rousey shot, title fight shot. Takes a while to come back for that, but Cecilia Brækhus, the multi-belt title holder, fights mostly in Denmark. She's actually called out home, and she's going to offer her $250,000 for a fight, one fight. And it will apparently be in Vegas if they do it. So Holly has said she's retired from boxing, but I don't think she has ever fought Brækhus. She hasn't, but they both fought some common opponents and done pretty much sort of the same. I think Brækhus knocked out one more person than Holm did, but they all beat the same people, basically. And Holm got beat by one opponent that Brækhus beat, but Holm beat the same girl on the weekend, so it's tough to tell by a common opponent, but if anyway, who would win? But Brækhus, when she called her out, said, it's sad that a great career ends like this. Now she will always be remembered for running away from Cecilia Brækhus, the best female fighter in the world. And we talked a little bit about Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalev. Apparently they were supposed to meet. They talked about, made a gentleman's agreement they were going to fight each other. Stevenson had reached a two-fight verbal but not signed agreement with HBO, and the first was going to be a matchup with Andres Fonfara in May, and then the second fight would have been against Kovalev in the fall. Stevenson is the WBC light heavyweight champion. He has a record of 22-1 with 19 knockouts. Kovalev is the WBO champ with a record of 24-0-1 and 22 knockouts. And people want to see this fight, but since the breakup there and Stevenson signing with Al Haymon, he reneged on the Kovalev fight and also demanded more money for the Fonfara fight. HBO rejected that idea, and Stevenson turned to Showtime. that was it. Now he's tied to Showtime. And so he's not going to fight Kovalev at all. So I guess that's one of the reasons, another reason why Kovalev would call him a piece of shit. For the tactics like that. But, and then Kathy Duva is Kovalev's promoter, former guest of ours. She has a new nickname for Stevenson. She's calling him Super Duck. Remember the last time you saw Jeff Lacy fight, Tony?
The last time you saw him fight? Well, I knew he fought a couple of years ago. The boy from my cell phone was probably the beating he took from Jake Alvagi.
Yeah. He's coming back May 24th on that Stevenson-Fonfara card, actually. Former super middleweight champion Jeff Left Hook Lacy. Speaking of left hooks, like we talked about with Bobby earlier. He's 36, and he returned to the ring after a three-year absence to stop Martin Verdin in three rounds last November. He's going to face former Russian Olympian and world amateur champion Artur Beterbiev, 4-0, with four KOs. And I bet you Artur Beterbiev never has bitter beer face. Heck of a name. 4-0, 4 KOs. Lacy actually is probably most remembered in the area for his second round KO over local challenger Scott Pemberton in 2005. Pemberton was 38 then and retired one fight later. That's in Montreal. Tito Trinidad has been in a little bit of financial troubles. He grossed $90 million during his championship career in the ring, but apparently now he's in economic ruin, or he's going to be able to somehow get out of it. I don't know. There's been some conflicting reports. He and his father, Felix Trinidad Sr., who trained him throughout his career, lost about $63 million through investments linked to Puerto Rico government bonds, according to court paperwork. But he also apparently made a deal recently, reached a debt deal with a local bank following alleged loss of $63 million. And Tuesday's deal just temporarily halts a $2.9 million payment that Banco Popular had sought from Trinidad. Him and his father filed a complaint with the Financial Industry Regulation Authority using their former advisor, Jose Ramos, of making investments without their consent. Ramos said that's false. And Trinidad is scheduled to be inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame on June 8th. But somebody's going to have to donate him plane tickets, I think.
Wow.
These stories are...
You know, that brings back an old investment cliche. Thou shall not put all thine eggs in one basket. And he broke that rule.
Yeah, I guess basically the story is all the people in Puerto Rico investing in these bonds, they started losing big money actually in September because investors became alarmed over a $70 billion debt load, the bad economy down there, and their ability to balance any budgets. That's U.S. territory, Puerto Rico. I don't know what that says about us. That $70 billion would cripple them. I don't know how much cripples us. Their funds and assets sank by roughly $6 billion during 2013. And to put that in perspective, you know, for us, that's actually what the Fertittas, that's less, a little less than what the Fertittas had in debt when they bankrupted Station Casino and stuff there in Vegas. They had $6.5 billion in debt, but Puerto Rico, their fund shrank by roughly $6 billion during 2013, and they posted losses totaling almost $2.4 billion. Unbelievable. So all his net worth, you know, nearly all of Trinidad's net worth was invested in Puerto Rico government bond funds. This guy Ramos was their financial advisor for years. He also worked in many of the largest brokerages in Puerto Rico, including UBS and Wells Fargo. Pretty shitty stuff when people mess with money like that. Lose money at that rate. You know, some corruption's going on there. We had a father and son conversation earlier. We got to have another father and son conversation about MMA here. UFC Hall of Famer Randy Couture is talking a little bit more about his son's exit from the UFC. He also doesn't believe the Nevada State Athletic Commission's ban on testosterone replacement therapy was about doing the right thing as much as it was about cleaning up the UFC's image. He said, in a small way, it implicated the UFC when they highlighted Vitor Belfort, who had a TRT exemption. And he said he never heard of TRT until the UFC doctor turned him onto it and told him what it was all about. Was, I think, one of the reasons why the UFC, they didn't want to be implicated. They didn't want to be party to that. So they moved for the commission to ban the exemptions. I think they were just trying to cover their butt by pushing the ban on exemptions through. Interesting take on things.
Yeah, and I think that kind of makes sense. Hard, very hard to argue with that. Very hard.
But Couture also, you know, he had some issues with the UFC. He had some lawsuits going on with the UFC at one point. There was all kinds of interests involved. Mark Cuban was backing Couture at the time for his fight league, trying to get into his fight league. Couture ended up mending fences with the UFC, going back with him. And then, finally, when he was kind of an ambassador to the UFC and going to all their events, he had another falling out because he signed on to be a coach for Bellator reality series Fight Master. So they said, you're not allowed to corner your own son. And we just heard Bobby Gunn Jr. talk about how important it is to have his dad in his corner. You can imagine the same thing is probably true for Ryan Couture. And he didn't do that well in the UFC without his father in his corner. So it makes you wonder. But Couture has been pretty much, you know, tight-lipped a little bit about that whole situation. And he's actually speaking out a little bit more about it now. Let's see what any of his quotes here. I don't think I clipped out his quotes here, but you know, he's been speaking out about it and saying it's a pretty stupid thing to do. Talked about Wanderlei Silva, not going to fight. We got a big MMA fight this weekend. Fabricio Werdum versus Travis Brown, Saturday night. 17-5-1 is Werdum. Travis Brown is 16-1-1. And Werdum, one thing I know he's going to have to avoid is the elbows. Better avoid those elbows. Travis is pretty good with them.
Yeah, this is definitely a clash of styles, and I think that if Werdum gets past the first round, I think he's in good shape. Because Travis Brown's ground game, and I'm sure he's working hard on it, but his ground game, I don't feel, is anywhere near Werdum's. And supposedly they've trained together, and Werdum feels that Travis Brown has a few cardio issues, and Werdum is not going to just charge in and do what the other guys have done that's got him knocked out pretty quick, you know, get into a clinch with him and try to do a takedown off the fence in the first minute of the fight. Says he's not going to do that, so it ought to be interesting.
And the co-main event is Misha Tate and Liz Carmouche, Gorilla Carmouche there. Tate's 13-5, famous for her bouts with Ronda Rousey, especially her last one, where she lasted longer than anybody's ever gone with Ronda Rousey. Liz Carmouche actually held that record right after Misha's first fight, and they first opened the women's division in the UFC with their fight. So Liz lost that one a little quicker than Misha lost her last one to Rousey. But Liz is 9-4, So this will be an interesting fight, I think. See what Liz learned, and we'll see how Misha's adapted a little bit. We got Donald Cerrone, the cowboy there, 22-6, fighting Edson Barboza. That's a pretty interesting matchup. Barboza's 13-1. You got a couple guys with one loss only. Brad Tavares, 12-1, fighting Yoel Romero Palacio, who's 7-1. And we also have Rafael Dos Anjos, who's 20-6, 20 wins, 6 losses, fighting undefeated Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's 21-0. And then we have Thiago Alves back in action. He's 19-9, fighting Seth Levinsky, who's 19-10. Pat Healy, 29-18, fighting Jorge Masvidal, 25-8. Alex White, 9-0, fighting Esteban Payan, who's 14-5. We got Luke Zachrich, who's 13-2, fighting Kyle Magalhães. Jordan Mean, 27-9, fighting Hernani Perpetuo, who's 17-3. And Dustin Ortiz, who's 12-3. And he's fighting Ray Borg, who's 6-0. And I don't know if he's related, but Tito Ortiz has actually just announced this fight, too. He's actually going to be fighting a Bellator fighter who's bumping up in weight. Another Russian. We'll get to that later, I think. But pretty interesting. I don't think this Dustin Ortiz is any relation, but he kind of looks like him. We also have a couple more fights here. Undefeated Mursad Bektik, 7 wins, no losses. Fighting Chas Skelly, who's got 11 wins, no losses. Derek Lewis, 9-2. Fighting Jack May, 7-0. That's going to be a pretty interesting card for a free fight. That's Fox 11, right? UFC on Fox 11. So, see how that goes down. Talked about the other two fights there, Saturday and Wednesday. We got Bellator coming up tomorrow night. We haven't mentioned that. And we got a bunch of boxing going this weekend. We got to run down. I got the first page up on BoxRec, but I know there's a bunch of stuff. We'll run that down. Bellator, we've got Douglas Lima fighting Rick Hahn. Lima's 25-5. Rick Hahn is 18-2. That's the main event. We got Patrick Freire, who's 12-5, fighting Derek Campos, who's 14-3. Marcin Held, who's 17-3, fighting Derek Anderson, 11-0. Carl Amasou is 16-6-2. He's fighting David Gomez, who's 16-7. Jordan Parsons, 9-1, fighting Tim Baser, who's 14-15. Julio Cesar Neves, Jr., who's 28-0, fighting Josh Arocho, who's 13-12. Victor Moreno, 32-19-0, fighting Anthony Smith, who's 17-11. We got Joe Vedipo, who's 14-8. He's fighting Ben Crowder, who's 10-11. Cliff Wright, 8-5, fighting LaRue Burley, who's 3-0. Jared Downing, who's 9-4, will be fighting Martin Brown, who's 4-2. And actually, we have a former guest of ours here, Houston Alexander, 15-10, fighting Matt Ude, who's 3-4. So, that about does it for MMA. I know we got the Showbox big event coming up this weekend. Let's see what else we got here. We got ESPN2 first, I think. If I can find it. Showtime card. Main event is Alexi Collado, 18-0, 16 knockouts, fighting Rod Salka, who's 18-3 with only 3 knockouts. That's a 10-round lightweight fight. The USA Showtime card there is, I think, starting at 10:45 from what I read, so I don't know how many of these fights are going to show. We also have a couple, lighter fights, actually two welterweights and one light middleweight fight. They're all 8-rounders. Felix Diaz is undefeated, 14-0, with 8 knockouts. He's fighting Emmanuel Larti. He's 15-1-1 with 7 knockouts. Then we have welterweight Sammy Vasquez, who's 13-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Juan Rodriguez Jr., who's 11-0 with 5 knockouts. We have light middleweight Udell Johnson, 14-1 with 9 knockouts, and Glenwood Dozier, who's 9-5-1 with 4 knockouts. And the big prospect is Erickson Lubin, who's 4-0 with 4 knockouts, will be fighting Jovan Ramirez, who's 3-1 with 1 knockout loss. No knockouts yet in this appointment. That's just a 4-rounder. Rest of 4-rounders, too. See what else we got. We got an ESPN 2's card. That's at the Turning Stone Resort Casino, by the way. The Mike Tyson card is in Pittsburgh, Tony's favorite town.
Yeah, right.
I went through Pittsburgh once. It was not very eventful. Just at the bus stop there. Wasn't much going on. Anyway, we had the Turning Stone Resort in Verona, New York, is the ESPN2 card. We got 2 8-rounders headlining that one. Brandon Adams, 13-0, with 9 knockouts, fighting Raymond Gattaca, 18-2, 9 knockouts. And then we've got Vitaly Kopylenko, 23-0, with 13 knockouts, fighting Willie Monroe Jr., 16-1, and 6 knockouts. Then we've got...
Jr. has a win over Marvin Hagler.
Oh, yeah. Heavyweights, too, on this card. 6-rounder, Donovan Dennis, 9-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Nat Heaven, 8-0 with 6 knockouts. I never heard of a boxer named Heaven.
Heaven Farmer. He found some foot last year.
Who?
Heaven Farmer.
No, that's Tevin. I'm talking Heaven. As in, going to heaven when you die.
I don't know, either. I think it's heaven. I was like, oh, no, there's no food right here. So heaven, no, I can't say that. I can't say
that. Matt Heaven, N-A-T, is his first name. You're not going to heaven if you're going up against Nat Heaven. No, I don't know. Simeon Hardy, 11-0, is going to be fighting Raham Mustafa Yuzubov, also on that card. He's 9-14. And see what else we got. As I said, Bernard Hopkins had his last press conference tonight as well. And I don't have the exact quotes yet, but I will. I'm sure at some point tonight get sent those. They'll be up on the blog. He's got a big fight coming up. We got the WBA World Super Bantamweight title on the line over in the United Kingdom. Scott Quigg is in action. He's 27-0-2 with 20 knockouts. And he's fighting Shifiwa Munyawa. Munyai. He's 24-2-1 with 12 knockouts. They also have Anthony Crolla on that card. He's 27-4-1 fighting for the WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. He's fighting John Murray, who's 33-2 with 20 knockouts. Then we have Josh Warren, 16-0 with 1 knockout, fighting Rendell Monroe, who's 28-4-1 with 11 knockouts. There's also a funny name for a boxer, Tyrone Nurse, 27-1 with the five knockouts, fighting Tyler Goodjohn, who's 10-2. See what else? It's over in the UK. Pretty good card there. The WBO NABO featherweight title is on the line on Saturday from Orlando, Florida. Orlando Cruz fighting 23-1, 20 wins, 3 losses, 1 draw. He's got 10 knockouts. Fighting Gamalier Rodriguez, who's 26-2-3 with 16 knockouts. As I said, Bernard Hopkins in action against Bebut Shumanov. This looks like a mismatch of the week because Shumanov has 15 fights total. 14 wins, 1 loss, 9 knockouts. The fight is for the WBA Super World Light Heavyweight title, the IBF Light Heavyweight title, and the International Boxing Association Light Heavyweight title. Bernard Hopkins has a record of 54 wins, 6 losses, and 2 draws with 32 knockouts. And really, I don't think Bebut Shumanov has a chance here.
Well, no, when you get a guy who's only 50 years old, anybody's going to have a chance. But you're looking at a guy that's going to be top ever.
Well, Bernard Hopkins is alien old. He's not Joe Louis old. So.
You're right.
Put it that way. I think Bebut signed up for the wrong trip here. Because this is a perfect opportunity for Bernard Hopkins to show he still has power and really, you know, rough this guy up and not even bother going 12 rounds. I know Bebut Shumanov's been a big name for some reason, even though he's only got that limited amount of fights. But if you look at his record, there's really no world beaters on that slate. You know, he's fought a lot of guys with under 25 fights. Fought a lot of guys with a few big losses on his way up. And the guy he lost to is no world beater. Gabriel Campillo, 19-2 at the time, lost that fight at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas back in 2010. Fought William Joppy back in 2011, Danny Santiago in 2011, Enrique Ornelas. All these fights in Vegas except for one, the Joppy one, was actually in Kazakhstan. Knocked Joppy out in the 6th round.
Are you getting a new fight, what did you say, 2011?
Joppy, 2011, January.
You're talking about a guy that is pretty much irrelevant since 2003, when Bernard Hopkins threw him apart, shred by shred.
So I'm really not impressed with this guy's record. I mean, one thing you can say about him is he didn't fight a bunch of bums at the beginning of his career. He only had like 3 warm-up fights, basically. He fought one real opponent, Shannon Miller. That was his 3rd fight, and that guy was 23-39-8. And since then, he has fought everybody just about over 20 wins, at least. One fight with that 19-2 Gabriel Campillo.
Two fights, actually,
because he rematched him and won the split decision after losing a majority decision. So, had trouble twice with Campillo.
And what did Campillo do to Campillo? I think it lasted 2 rounds, maybe 3.
So, he has fought a lot of guys with a lot of good records, but not guys with, you know, world championship caliber, you could say. Nobody like Bernard Hopkins, let's put it that way. And this is a huge step up for a guy like that. And then Paulie Malignaggi is not going to be in the broadcast booth for this one. He's 33-5 with 7 knockouts. He's going to be fighting for the IBF welterweight title against Sean Porter in another 12-round fight here. Porter's 23-0 with 1 draw and 14 knockouts. We got Peter Chocolate Quillen there. He's 30-0 with 22 knockouts. WBO middleweight title on the line against Lucas Konechny, who's got 50 wins himself, 23 knockouts, and 4 losses. We got not that Saddam, but Saddam Ali, welterweight. He's 18-0 with 11 knockouts. He's fighting Michael Clark, who's 44-9 with 18 knockouts and 1 draw. That's what I like about some of these cards. You know, they really throw the best people against each other, not just one or two good fights at the top.
I think the Sean Porter Majinali fight's very intriguing because Sean Porter had quite an amateur background, and then as he turned pro, I remember the first time he was on Friday Night Fights, he still had that amateur bouncing style, and he just couldn't seem to sit down on his punches. You remember that? And then Teddy Atlas was very specific in his critique, and I think Sean Porter handled it very professionally. And he immediately changed his style, and now he's got a professional style, and I think this is a huge test for him. And if he can get by Marginale, which is not a given. I mean, Marginale, you can give anyone fits on any given night, but if he gets past him, he's got a lot of good things coming. So this is quite a matchup.
And we were talking a couple of weeks ago, I think now, about another guy, Shannon Briggs. He is back in action, fighting somebody named Francisco Mirles in Minnesota, of all places, at Black Bear Creek. What is it? Black Bear Casino in Carlton, Minnesota, Saturday. And he's co-headlining the fight with AJ Sands, cruiserweight. 12-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Keith Barr there in the main event. Barr is 12-5, and this is for the vacant NABA USA Cruiserweight title. Say that 10 times fast. Shannon's 52-6-1, got 46 knockouts. He's fighting Francisco Mireles, who's 17-8. All 8 losses have come by way of knockout. And he's got 5 knockouts of his own. So good luck to Francisco. But Shannon Briggs is on there. He's ready to go ballistic. He just had a fight. If you didn't know the 411, he last fought on 411. Lorenzo Smith. That's this month, April 1st. It was no April Fool's joke. No, April 11th. It was April 11th. He was a first-round knockout. That was a guy who was 12-8-3. So he's getting the human punching bags lined up, I guess. We'll see if it gets him to title contention anytime soon, but he's got to fight some guys better than that. Not bad for warming up so far. What else we got? We got the WBC female lightweight title on the line. Belgium, Erica Annabella Farias, 19-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Delphine Persoon, who's 28-1 with 13 knockouts. And that is a co-main event. With the other fight being for the vacant WBC Mediterranean lightweight title between Hedi Slimani, who's 15-2, and Afif Hamdani, who's 18-6-1. That is probably one of the best men's female fights I've seen advertised in a while. We're into Sunday over in China and Japan. Something jumping out at me. Monday. Nothing really going on Wednesday. And we're almost really out of time anyway. But I do have one last little story. Gina Carano looks like she is coming back. I'm not going to have any exclusive news here, but Ronda Rousey did already sign to fight somebody else, but you know, we didn't expect her next fight to be Gina Carano anyway. But at any rate, Dana White did speak following the Tough Nations finale, and he said that he's confident Gina Carano will fight in the UFC. Now, they had their conversation supposedly last Wednesday. He said he's very confident, quote, very confident that Carano is going to fight in the UFC octagon, but no deal has been signed. His direct quote was, Gina Carano and I had a good meeting. I'm very confident that she does want to come back and she does want to fight. We do not have a deal, but we might soon. So, she's obviously going to fight for the champion. They made that known, championship belt. Another little story about blacking out. We talked about the other guy, Maranjo, there, blacking out, Junior Maranjo. Same thing happened at a Tough Enough amateur mixed martial arts card at the Orleans on Friday night out in Las Vegas. And it was Carlos Garcia who actually had the Tough Enough 135-pound title, and this was the main event. He passed out minutes before he was set to begin his walk to the cage to fight a guy named Ralphie Pacheco. And this was an amateur fight. Just fell face first to the floor backstage. And even though he was sitting up with his back to a wall moments later and had no recollection of what had happened, he insisted to his coaches that he was able to get up and wanted to fight. They shot down the request and told him the fight was off. So before he even stepped into his ring, into the cage, his trainers, as an amateur, knew no fight. But they treated the other guy to the point where they propped him up and said, go back out there in the middle of the fight. Unreal. Now, I actually have saved the best story for last, I think, because I guess Tom is going to have to fly more and go to some exotic countries. We're going to have to come up with a budget for him so he can mimic the behavior of this one guy. I don't know if you heard about this, but this is a guy who was on a flight back from Turkey the other day where the Glory 15 show was, and some belligerent drunk guy went ballistic on the plane and
put
him in a rip. That's my story of the week, oddball story, MMA story, but he's an MMA journalist, this guy, and here's how it pretty much went down. He actually had some judo and jiu-jitsu experience. And just went up to this guy who was kicking the flight attendants and causing all kinds of mayhem. Went up to the flight attendants and asked him, would you like me to subdue him? They said, yeah, sure. So he went over and put a rear naked choke on him. And the guy gave up, basically. And they were able to subdue him. And this is after he punched somebody in the face, kicked one person in the groin, and kicked somebody else in the stomach. He ran across a bunch of seats, drunk, and stepped on people in their seats. And this guy came back there, put the works on him, and tapped him out, basically. And the odd thing was, you know, this is a plane coming back from a big MMA event, so... not only was this guy on the plane, but who else was on this plane? Rashad Evans and Tyrone Spong. Obviously, he wasn't in any position to help. Tyrone just broke his leg, but Rashad Evans was on the same plane. But he was way up front because he must have had the first-class seat.
Yeah.
So he was not within shot of all this going on. But this guy, you know, he's kind of being called a hero. But he said, I just feel like I did my job in helping out in the situation. I wouldn't call myself a hero. It's not like I disarmed a guy with a submachine gun. I helped get control of the guy and helped quell the situation from getting worse. And the kicker of this whole thing is, guess what movie this guy was watching when this all went down? Die Hard.
You know,
he was watching the movie Die Hard.
Yeah, do you want to hear an interesting fact about the movie Die Hard?
What?
Do you remember the bad guy's name in Die Hard?
No.
The first one? The bad guy's name in the first Die Hard was Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber?
That was also the name of the doctor that delivered me.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I guess in the making of Hollywood saw me come out, figured I was such a bad seed that they decided to name a horrible movie villain after the guy that gave birth to me.
A couple other quick boxing notes. Arislandi Lara, 19-1-2, has pulled out of his scheduled fight with Ishe Smith, and he'll fight Canelo Alvarez, our guest tonight's favorite fighter there. He's 43-1-1, Alvarez, and their fight's going to be on July 12th. It's going to be a pay-per-view fight. Lara had been actually calling out Canelo, and Canelo is going to take up the challenge. Provodnikov, we spoke about, his search for a partner to fight has ended, and it's going to be Chris Algieri. They're going to headline an HBO Boxing After Dark card at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Demetrius Andrade, who's 20-0, will fight in the televised co-feature against Brian Rose, who's 25-1-1. If you're in the area, Saturday, April 19th, Bernard Hopkins will not only be taking on Bebut Shumanov then, but the weigh-in, which is probably going to be front tomorrow night, is going to be open to the public. And it's going to be at the Marriott Ballroom West at 999 9th Street in Northwest Washington, D.C. Doors open at noon. Weigh-in begins at 1 p.m. Last one here, I think. Middleweight Billy Joe Saunders has got a fight in the rematch between Derek Chisora and Tyson Fury. He's going to be taking on Emmanuel Wandamura with the vacant European title. That's it. Till next week, folks. We're going to end.
All right, guys. We've got an exciting weekend. Let's enjoy the fight.
We're going to let the Blog Talk Radio lady kick us off for once.
Yep.
Good show.
All right,
and,
guys.
I got some good candidates for another show. I actually was talking to Travis Luter the other day on Facebook. It's a possibility. We're going to get him. Another one is Victor Chinian. It would be interesting. He's got a fight coming up, and he's talking about also going into MMA at some point. So.
Cool.
A great guest.
Boy, never a dull moment. And I'll be ready on the next flight that I'm on. You know, those of us that live and breathe this stuff kind of take it for granted. As far as who to call for a rear naked choke, but I guess if someone doesn't train, it's not that difficult. So I'll be ready.
Yeah.
All right, guys. See you next week.
I've been to the sky before. Oh. Adios, folks. Thank you.